Welcome to The Deep Dive. I'm Chris Wyatt.
And I'm Morgan Grace. Great to be here.
Today, we're joined by Morgan, our expert on federal market synthesis and regulatory analysis.
Pleasure to be digging into this.
Yeah.
We're really looking at what some are calling a policy-driven revolution. Mm-hmm. It's sweeping through U.S. federal agencies and, maybe even more urgently, their contractors.
Yeah, it feels like more than just another tech upgrade cycle.
Oh, absolutely. This is foundational. It's mandated. It's a complete overhaul of how digital trust works in these environments.
That's the perfect setup. So today, our deep dive is officially titled, Why U.S. Federal Civilian Agencies, Federal Systems Integrators, and Defense Contractors Should Adopt Absolute Security to Meet Initiatives, Mandates, and Mission Requirements to Secure and Accelerate Speed to Mission. Quite a mouthful, but it gets to the heart of it.
It really does. And the context here is critical. The federal market is facing this irreversible transformation. It's driven by mandates, deadlines, and it's creating this huge immediate market opportunity.
Opportunity? How big are we talking?
Well, conservative estimates, just for the kind of foundational security resilience we'll be discussing, the stuff that fixes the inherent fragility, in current systems, we're looking at maybe $1 to $2 billion.
Yeah.
Annually.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Because to secure their missions, to accelerate anything, these organizations first have to guarantee the integrity of every single device they rely on, period.
Okay, let's start right there. Why is that old way, the traditional security model,
you know,
the castle and moat, why is it obsolete now? What are the specific mandates forcing this massive rethink?
Well, the catalyst, the real starting gun, was Executive Order 1408, improving the nation's cybersecurity. That order basically said, stop implicitly trusting users and networks just because they're inside the perimeter.
Right. The assumption that inside equals safe.
Exactly. Yeah. That assumption is gone. The FEO mandates a shift to zero trust architecture, or ZTA. It acknowledges threats are already inside, and trust needs to be earned constantly, not just assumed at the door.
And the practical how-to guide for agencies came from OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, that M2209 memo.
Correct. M22-09 lays out the operational requirements. It demands continuous, perpetual verification. Every user, every device, every application, every single transaction,
yeah,
it needs to be verified. Every time.
No free passes.
None. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter if you were trusted 5 minutes ago. Default trust is out. And this puts enormous pressure on one specific part of the ZTA model, the device's pillar. Yeah, within the ZTA framework's device, the laptop, the server, the endpoint, it becomes the primary anchor of trust. It's the thing you have to believe in first.
Now, the mandates require constant monitoring of these devices.
Consistently tracked and monitored, that's the language.
Yeah.
And crucially, the verifiable health status of that device has to be factored into every single access decision the system makes, instantly.
Meaning, if the device can't prove it's clean, configured right, patched, access denied?
That's the ideal. That's the goal. Access denied or severely restricted.
Okay, sounds logical.
Got it.
Here's the catch I see coming. If the whole zero trust strategy hinges on knowing the true state of that endpoint, what happens if the tool's reporting that state? What if they fail? Where's the fragility?
Ah, you've hit it. That is the fundamental weakness.
Yeah.
It's the Achilles heel of how ZTA is often implemented right now. Those security agents, the EDR, the encryption tools, the config managers, the software reporting the device's health. It's just software.
Sitting on top of the OS.
Exactly. And software sitting on an OS is notoriously fragile. Users uninstall it by accident, OS updates break it, conflict with other software. Or worse, malware specifically targets and disables it. That's a common attack vector.
And when those critical agents go offline, poof, invisible. That's the dark endpoint we hear about.
Precisely. The dark endpoint. It's a device. It might be plugged into the network trying to get access, but it's completely invisible to your security and ZTA tools because its agent failed. Or maybe IT wiped the machine and forgot to reinstall the full security stack.
So the ZTA policy engine is flying blind.
Completely. If that device can't continuously prove it's trustworthy, but it still gets access somehow, maybe through a cached credential or a policy exception, it breaks the entire verify continuously promise of ZTA right at the most critical point.
And that opens the door for attackers to move laterally.
It's the number one risk. The policy engine is making decisions based on stale or missing data. It's essentially useless if it can't trust the telemetry coming from the endpoint itself.
Okay, so ZTA is driving the civilian agencies, but then you have the Defense Industrial Base and the DIB grappling with CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification. This sounds less like a strategy recommendation and more like a requirement to stay in business.
That's exactly right. It's contractually mandated. CMMC 2.0 compliance isn't optional. It will be a prerequisite for getting or renewing DoD contracts.
And there's a hard deadline looming.
November 10th, 2025. That's when enforcement officially begins. And this impacts, well, estimates vary, but somewhere around 80,000 defense contractors. It's a huge undertaking, especially for smaller businesses in the supply chain.
Let's quickly break down the CMMC levels. Which one affects the most companies right now?
Okay, level one is foundational. That's for companies handling basic federal contract information, or FCI. It just requires an annual self-assessment against 15 controls. Simple stuff, mostly.
But the real focus is level two.
Level two, advanced. That's the big one. It applies to the vast majority of the DIB, anyone handling controlled unclassified information, CUI. And this level aligns directly with NIST Special Publication 800-171, Revision 2. We're talking 110 specific security controls.
And it's not just a self-check.
No way. Level 2 requires a formal assessment every 3 years by a C3PAO that's a certified third-party assessment organization. They come in, they audit you against those 110 controls.
Okay, rigorous. But there's something else too, right? An annual requirement.
Yes, and this is crucial. Even between those triennial audits, Level 2 requires a mandatory annual executive affirmation of compliance. A senior company official has to sign off, confirming they're still meeting all 110 controls, and submit that to the DoD's SPRS system, the Supplier Performance Risk System.
And that annual affirmation, signed by an executive, that seems incredibly risky because of this idea of compliance drift.
It is the DIB's biggest headache. It mirrors that ZTA fragility problem exactly. How do you implement those 110 NIST controls?
Yeah.
Mostly with software agents, right? Anti-malware, DLP, configuration settings enforced by software.
Right. Same potential points of failure.
Exactly. So imagine a contractor passes their big C3PAO audit.
Yeah.
They get the check mark on Tuesday. But by Friday, maybe an OS update interferes with their EDR agent on 10% of laptops. Or a patch breaks the encryption enforcement on a few servers.
Suddenly, they're not meeting all 110 controls anymore.
Bingo. That compliant posture has drifted. They are technically non-compliant. Now, think about that executive signing the annual affirmation. If they sign it without knowing about that drift, they're potentially attesting to something false.
Which carries huge legal and contractual liability.
A massive. It turns a hidden technical failure into a major business risk.
And this isn't just for the big prime contractors, is it? It flows down.
It absolutely flows down. The primes, Lockheed, RTX, Northrop Grumman, they're contractually obligated to ensure their subcontractors meet the required CMMC level 2. That means tens of thousands of smaller businesses are also caught in this compliance net. The enforcement burden just cascades. Hashtag, tag, 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 CNIST, CSF 2.0, and governance.
And beyond ZTA and CMMC, there's a broader shift happening too, right? With the NIST cybersecurity framework, CSF 2.0, updated in 2024.
Yes, that's another important piece of the puzzle. The most significant change in CSF 2.0 was the addition of a sixth core function.
Govern.
So taking cybersecurity out of just the IT department's basement?
Pretty much. Historically, cybersecurity might have been seen as purely technical. The govern function explicitly elevates it to an enterprise-level risk management issue. It demands leadership accountability, strategic alignment with business goals.
And proof. It significantly increases the demand for tools and processes that provide demonstrable, continuous, and critically audible evidence that security controls are actually effective across the whole organization.
Mm.
Leaders can't just set policy. They need proof it's working. They need to verify.
Does this also tie into supply chain risks?
Absolutely. CSF 2.0 puts a much stronger emphasis on cybersecurity supply chain risk management, CSCRM. This lines up perfectly with EO 14028's focus on things like secure software development and needing software bills of materials, SBOMs.
So organizations need visibility not just into their own stuff, but into the security of the software and services they buy from others.
That's the idea. You need to understand the risk posture of your entire ecosystem, ensuring vendors aren't introducing blind spots or vulnerabilities. It's about holistic risk management.
Okay. So we've got these huge systemic problems, ZTA's potential for dark endpoints, CMMC's compliance drift nightmare, and this overall push for auditable governance. It seems clear just adding more fragile software isn't the solution.
It definitely isn't. The solution needs to address the root cause, the fragility itself. You need something that guarantees the security tools stay working, regardless of what's happening on the OS or the disk.
Which is where this absolute security technology comes in. It claims to be different.
It is fundamentally different. Because it's not just software installed on the OS. It leverages their patented persistence technology. The key differentiator is that persistence is embedded deep within the system at the factory, right into the BIOS or UEFI firmware.
Firmware, so below the operating system level.
Exactly. We're talking about hardware-level integration. It's already built into over 600 million devices globally from, well, pretty much every major OEM you can think of: Dell, HP, Lenovo, Microsoft Surface, Panasonic, GetTac, over 28 of them.
Okay, embedded in the firmware, how does that create an unbreakable link for security that standard software can't match?
Right, so when a customer activates the Absolute Service on one of these devices, that dormant firmware module wakes up. It establishes this persistent, self-healing, two-way connection directly to the Absolute Cloud platform.
Self-healing how?
Because it lives below the OS. It's resilient to things that kill normal software. So if the main Absolute software agent, the one doing the monitoring and control, gets corrupted or disabled or even completely uninstalled
by malware or a user or even an IT mistake,
doesn't matter the cause, the firmware module detects that the agent is missing or broken, and it automatically triggers a full reinstallation and remediation of that agent. No user intervention needed, no IT ticket required. It just fixes itself.
Okay, wait. So let's say IT takes a laptop, completely wipes the hard drive clean, installs a brand new Windows image.
As soon as that device connects to the internet, the firmware module reaches out to the Absolute Cloud and pulls down the agent again, automatically.
So it survives OS wipes, hard drive replacements?
OS reimages, hard drive replacements, even complex firmware updates. That link persists. For federal agencies, this is huge. It provides a genuine hardware root of trust for device identity critical for ZTA. It gives them an out-of-band management channel they can use, even if the main OS is hosed or the device is off the corporate network.
So it directly solves that dark endpoint problem. You always have visibility.
Always. You maintain that connection, that visibility, even when traditional tools would fail. It ensures you can always see and control the asset. 100% visibility, 100% of the time. That's the goal. #B, product portfolio and federal readiness.
That technology sounds powerful, but for the federal space, you need the right paperwork, the right authorizations. What's the status there?
Absolutely crucial. And yes, in March 2025, the Absolute Secure Endpoint Product Suite achieved FedRAMP Moderate Authorization to Operate, or ATO.
FedRAMP Moderate, that's the big one for civilian agencies, right?
It's non-negotiable for deployment in Federal Civilian Executive Branch, FCEB, agencies. Having that FedRAMP Moderate ATO is a massive advantage. It dramatically streamlines the security reviews and authorization process for any federal agency wanting to use the platform. It basically pre-vets the solution.
Okay, let's break down the Absolute Secure Endpoint Suite itself. You mentioned it's the resilience engine. What are the core capabilities and how do they map back to those mandates we talked about?
Sure. Think of it in three core pillars, all underpinned by that persistence technology.
Okay.
First is visibility. This is your foundational asset intelligence. Absolute collects hundreds of data points, hardware specs, installed software titles and versions, patch status, even geolocation if needed.
Which directly addresses that OMBM 2209 mandate to consistently track and monitor devices and helps with that inventory problem the GAO found.
Exactly. It provides that accurate, complete, firmware verified inventory that so many agencies struggle with. It gives them a reliable single source of truth for what they actually own and manage.
Okay, pillar one, visibility. What's next?
Pillar two, resilience, specifically application resilience. This, I think, is the absolute key for tackling the CMMC drift and ZTA fragility problems.
How does that work? It extends the self-healing?
Yes. It takes that core self-healing power of persistence and extends it to other critical third-party security applications running on the endpoint. We're talking over 80 supported agents now. Things like EDR clients from CrowdStrike or SentinelOne, encryption tools like BitLocker Management, VPN clients, configuration management tools.
So if one of those agents fails or gets disabled?
Absolutely. It automatically detects it based on rules the customer sets and then repairs it, restarts it, or even reinstalls it from scratch if necessary. It ensures those critical security controls stay operational.
That sounds like the direct answer to compliance drift for CMMC.
It is. For a CMMC contractor, application resilience can guarantee that the security controls needed to meet those 110 NIST SP 800-171 requirements remain functional continuously. It takes compliance from a stressful point-in-time snapshot to an ongoing verifiable state.
Providing the auditable evidence they need for that annual affirmation.
Precisely. It gives them the confidence and the proof to sign that document.
Okay, visibility, resilience. What's the third pillar?
Third is control. This gives organizations the power to take decisive action when a device is lost, stolen, or compromised. You can remotely locate it. You can freeze it, solid rendering it useless. You can selectively wipe specific sensitive files like CUI, or you can perform a full forensically sound data wipe.
And get proof it was done.
Yes, it provides a certificate of sanitization for audit trails, which ties directly into NIST requirements for media protection and incident response.
You also mentioned some newer capabilities around ransomware.
Right, the ransomware response and rehydrate capabilities.
Yeah.
Look, after a major incident, getting the fleet back online quickly is paramount. This uses that secure firmware connection to remotely assess device hygiene and then rapidly restore compromised machines to a known good, compliant baseline image.
Faster recovery.
Much faster, turning potentially days or weeks of manual rebuilding into potentially just hours, minimizing mission downtime.
Okay, that covers the endpoint resilience. But ZTA also has a network component. Does Absolute address that too?
Yes, through Absolute Secure Access. This product came from their acquisition of NetMotion. It specifically tackles the network's pillar of zero trust architecture.
How? Is it like a VPN replacement?
It's a modern zero trust network access, or ZTNA, solution. It creates a software-defined perimeter. Unlike traditional VPNs that often grant broad network access once you're connected, ZTNA grants access only on a possession least privilege basis to specific applications or resources.
Which stops attackers moving laterally if one device gets compromised.
Exactly. It dramatically reduces that attack surface. Plus, crucially for federal, it utilizes FIPS 140 Decode 2 and even the newer FIPS 143 validated cryptographic modes. That's essential for handling sensitive government data securely and meeting compliance mandates.
Okay, we've got the mandates, the problems they create, and this unique firmware-based solution. Now, let's get practical. For the sales teams out there, where should they be focusing their efforts first? Which specific agencies, which types of contractors, which integrators have the most acute, immediate need for this?
Right, prioritization is key. We need to think about it in terms of those core drivers we discussed. ZTA for the civilian agencies, CMMC enforcement for the defense world, and operational efficiency for the systems integrators who serve both. #A, Federal Civilian Agencies, FCEB, driven by zero trust. So for the Federal Civilian Executive Branch, the FCEB, the driver, is that mandated time-bound ZPA transition. Absolute Secure Endpoint, with its FedRAMP moderate ATO, is positioned as that foundational piece for the device's pillar.
So where's tier one priority with an FCEB? Who needs it most, or who has the most influence?
Top of the list has to be DHS and its CISA component, Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Infrastructure Security Agency.
Why?
Biggest civilian cyber budget, around $3 billion. CISA leads the ZTA implementation guidance for the whole government, and they manage the huge Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, CDM, about $470 million there.
So a win at CISA sets the standard.
Absolutely. It provides massive validation and directly influences what other FCEB agencies adopt. They look to CISA for best practices.
Okay, after DHS CISA, who's next in line? Agencies with huge amounts of sensitive data.
Exactly. You look at HHS Health and Human Services and the VA Department of Veterans Affairs. Think about the scale. Massive endpoint fleets, doctors, administrators, veterans accessing services remotely. And they're handling enormous volumes of highly sensitive PII and PHI health information.
So endpoint security and resilience are paramount for them.
Non-negotiable for protecting citizen data and ensuring healthcare delivery isn't disrupted. After them, you look at tier two agencies like DOE, Energy, Critical Infrastructure Focus, DOJ, Justice, Sensitive Law Enforcement Data, plus they run shared security services, and GSA, General Services Administration, they influence procurement policy itself.
And looking at specific initiatives within these agencies, how does Absolute plug into something like the CDM program? You mentioned inventory issues earlier.
It's foundational for CDM. Remember, CDM aims for dynamic, risk-based visibility across the enterprise. But it's garbage in, garbage out if the asset inventory feeding it isn't accurate. That GAO report finding 20 out of 23 agencies lacked complete inventory, that's crippling CDM.
So Absolute provides the reliable, good data in.
Precisely. The firmware verified, always on inventory feed from Absolute provides that accurate single source of truth. It directly addresses that critical CDM gap. Another key use case is high-value asset, HVA protection, ensuring the endpoints used by privileged administrators, the ones accessing the government's crown jewels. Ensuring those devices can never go dark or lose their security controls is a top priority. #AB. The Defense Industrial Base, DIB, driven by CMMC enforcement.
Okay, shifting gears to the Defense Industrial Base. Here, the driver isn't just strategy. It's the immediate, non-negotiable CMMC deadline, November 2025. It's about keeping contracts.
Exactly. Survival for many. So the DIB sales strategy has to be laser-focused. Tier 1 priority has to be the top 25 prime contractors. Your Lockheeds, RTXs, Northrop Grumman's, Boeing's.
Why the primes first? Biggest budgets.
Budgets, yes. But more importantly, they hold the contractual liability for that CMMC flowdown. They have to ensure their entire supply chain complies. So a strategic win with a prime isn't just one sale. It creates a powerful channel driving adoption down through potentially thousands of their subcontractors.
Makes sense. And then there's the sheer volume of mid-sized companies facing that level 2 audit.
That's the other huge immediate market, the CMMC level 2 segment. Estimates put it around 8,350 medium to large companies that need that formal C3PAO assessment. This is the segment under the most pressure right now.
What's the potential value there?
Based on estimated device counts in that segment, the immediate addressable market is somewhere between, say, $250 million and maybe $835 million annually. These companies need an efficient, affordable, and most importantly, auditable compliance solution. They can't afford complex, high-labor approaches.
So when talking to a CASO or compliance officer at one of these DIB companies, what are the killer use cases? What makes them sign the PO?
Number one, without a doubt, is continuous compliance enforcement. Pitching absolute resilience as the anti-drift solution. Showing them how application resilience guarantees those 110 NIST controls stay active, stay enforced all the time.
Taking the guesswork and panic out of that annual affirmation.
Completely. It provides the continuous auditable proof they need to confidently sign that document, reducing personal and corporate liability. I talked to one CISO who called the current process audit roulette. Absolute takes the chance element out of it.
Okay, continuous compliance, what else? Protecting the actual data.
That's use case number two, protecting the CUI itself.
Yeah.
Using absolute control. If a device with controlled unclassified information walks out the door, gets lost, gets stolen, the ability to remotely locate it, freeze it instantly, and then securely wipe the data and get that certificate, proving the wipe is huge.
Because that directly maps to specific NIST 800-171 controls they're audited against.
Exactly. It fulfills requirements around media protection, MP, and incident response IR controls within NIST 800-171. It's a tangible way to demonstrate due diligence in protecting sensitive defense information. #tag C. Federal Systems Integrators, FSIs, strategic multipliers.
All right, third category, the Federal Systems Integrators. The LATOs, CACIs, Booz Allens of the world. They're not the end customer agency or contractor, but they manage huge parts of the federal IT landscape. Why are they a priority target?
Because they're strategic multipliers, but also because Absolute solves a major operational headache for them. What do FSIs want? To reduce operational complexity and minimize their service delivery risk on these massive government contracts.
What's the specific pain point Absolute addresses for an FSI?
Think about their business model. They're often managing tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of endpoints for an agency. They're responsible for ensuring dozens of different security agents, EDR, encryption, patching, VPNs are all installed, healthy, and running correctly on every single machine.
Which, as we've established, is hard because agents break.
Constantly. And when an agent fails on a device they manage, the FSI has to fix it. That often involves manual remote troubleshooting, maybe even dispatching a tech. It's high cost, high labor, often unbillable work that eats directly into their contract margins.
And puts their SLA's service level agreements with the government at risk.
Absolutely. If they can't maintain the required security posture because agents keep failing, they risk missing SLAs, facing penalties, and damaging their reputation.
So, Absolute, with persistence and application resilience, becomes like an easy button for the FSI. Reduces their labor costs, de-risks their contracts.
That's the pitch. Absolute becomes a force multiplier for them. Persistence simplifies initial deployment. It's activation, not a complex push. And application resilience automates the ongoing maintenance and self-healing of all those other critical agents they're responsible for.
Less truck rolls, fewer help desk tickets for broken agents.
Exactly. It directly cuts their operational overhead, making their managed security services more resilient, easier to manage, and ultimately more profitable.
So what are the key use cases to pitch to an FSI?
Two main ones stand out. First, powering CMMC compliance as a service. FSIs are perfectly positioned to help the thousands of smaller DIB subcontractors who lack internal expertise. By embedding Absolute self-healing tech into a managed service offering, the FSI can provide a turnkey, high-margin CMMC compliance solution. It's a huge growth opportunity for them.
Okay, CMMC as a service. And the second?
Second is simply embedding resilience into their standard managed services. Whether it's managed endpoint security, SOC as service, integrating Absolute ensures the foundational controls they rely on stay working. It helps them meet their SLAs reliably, deliver more robust service, and differentiate themselves based on guaranteed resilience. Hashtag head KaiBV. Activating the ecosystem and engaging personas.
Okay, targets identified. FCEB agencies needing ZPA, DIB contractors needing CMMC assurance, FSIs needing efficiency. Now, how does this actually get sold and implemented? Let's talk channels and tailoring the message. Hashtag tag 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 ESSA, the critical role of the channel.
Right. You don't just walk into a federal agency and sell software off the street. Federal procurement is its own complex ecosystem. You have to work through established government aggregators and resellers.
And for Absolute, the main player there is Carahsoft.
Carahsoft is Absolute's master government aggregator. They're absolutely central to the federal strategy. Why? Because they hold the key contract vehicles. They provide streamlined access to government-wide acquisition contracts, GWACs, like the GSA schedule.
And the GSA schedule is important because...
speed and simplicity. For many federal buyers, the GSA schedule is the fastest, easiest way to procure technology. Pre-negotiated terms, simplified process. You can often go from a quote to a purchase order in just 2 to 4 weeks.
Which is critical given these tight ZTA and CMMC deadlines.
Exactly. Carahsoft ensures Absolute is readily available on the right contracts, making it easy for contracting officers and program managers to buy it quickly when they need it.
And does that factory firmware embedding help the channel partners too?
Oh, hugely. It's a massive logistical advantage for deployment. Because persistence is already in the hardware from Dell, HP, Lenovo, etc., the channel partner, or the FSI, isn't doing a complex, potentially failure-prone software push across thousands of devices.
It's just activating something already there.
Right. It becomes a simple, immediate activation.
Mm.
This means the fastest possible time to value for the customer, which is a huge selling point when you're racing against compliance clocks. Hashtag tag HIB. Tailoring the message to key personas.
Okay, channel strategy makes sense. But even with the right contracts, you need to speak the language of the specific person you're talking to. A CSO cares about different things than an IT asset manager. Let's break down those key personas.
Absolutely critical. One message does not fit all. We identified 4 key personas who are typically involved in these decisions.
Let's start at the top. The agency CIO or CISO, the strategist, what's driving them?
Their primary driver is governance and overall enterprise risk management. They're thinking big picture, long term.
So the message needs to be strategic.
Yes. You talk about Absolute providing the unbreakable foundation for their entire zero trust strategy. It guarantees the visibility and resilience they need to manage enterprise risk effectively. The pitch is you can now govern with confidence. You can meet those EO and OMB mandates on time, justify your budget, and crucially have auditable proof that your security controls are working as intended.
Okay, makes sense for the agency leader. Now shift to the DIB. The defense contractor, CISO, or compliance officer, what's their immediate pain point?
Audit confidence and keeping those DoD contracts. Their job, maybe even their personal liability, is on the line with CMMC.
So the message has to be much more specific and tactical.
Absolutely sharp. The message is Absolute automates CMMC compliance. Application resilience continuously enforces those 110 NIST controls. It eliminates compliance drift, and it gives you the rock-solid, auditable evidence you need for that annual affirmation and to pass your C3PAO audits. It's about removing risk, ensuring contract continuity, and frankly, helping them sleep at night.
Okay. Now for the FSI program manager or solution architect. They're running the service delivery. What do they care about most?
Their bottom line. Operational efficiency and profitability, reducing costs, minimizing risks on their contracts.
So the message is all about saving them money and hassle.
Pretty much. Absolute reduces operational costs. It eliminates that high cost, often unbillable manual labor spent chasing down and fixing broken security agents across thousands of endpoints they manage. It simplifies their life, makes their service delivery more reliable, and protects their SLAs and margins.
Got it. And finally, the folks dealing with the day-to-day reality, the IT asset or endpoint manager, what's their world about?
Simple. Inventory accuracy and having actual control over the devices. They're often struggling just to know what they have, where it is, and if it's secure.
So the message for them is straightforward.
Very tactical. See and control every endpoint always. Absolute gives them that single reliable source of truth for the entire fleet on network, off network, doesn't matter. This isn't just about ticking boxes for CDM reports. It enables practical things like finding underutilized software licenses they can reclaim or securely retiring old hardware with proof the data was wiped. eliminating downstream risks. It makes their job easier and more effective. #TagVV. Conclusion and final thought. So if we pull all these threads together, what we're seeing is really an inflection point in the federal market and its massive supply chain. The old way, relying solely on software for security enforcement, it's just not cutting it anymore against modern threats and these new mandates.
Right. Mandates like ZTA and CMMC have really exposed those systemic vulnerabilities, the fragility of software agents, the resulting gaps in visibility and control.
And what we've dug into today suggests that this hardware root of trust, the firmware-embedded persistence that Absolute offers, is uniquely positioned to solve those core problems. It addresses both ZTA's dark endpoint issue and CMMC's compliance drift simultaneously in a way traditional software can't.
Because it guarantees the security controls stay working.
Exactly. By making visibility constant and making those critical security tools perpetually self-healing and operational, it takes these ambitious federal security strategies, takes them from being fragile blueprints on paper, and turns them into resilient operational realities. It seems to be emerging as that essential platform for guaranteeing the endpoint integrity needed to really secure and accelerate mission speed across the board.
So for you listening, what's the takeaway? You've heard the sheer scale of this policy-driven shift, right? From the strategic anxieties of a CSO worried about governance, right down to the practical headaches of an endpoint manager just trying to keep track of devices. And you've seen how a capability embedded below the operating system in the hardware itself is now being positioned as potentially the only reliable way to achieve that kind of continuous compliance and true operational resilience that these mandates demand. Which leads me to a final, maybe provocative thought for you to chew on. We focused today on the U.S. federal government and its contractors, a massive ecosystem, no doubt. But given their absolute reliance now on this kind of hardware-level, self-healing tether to ensure security and compliance, how long before this type of persistent firmware-level control becomes a baseline expectation, maybe even a regulatory requirement for all critical infrastructure sectors? Think finance, energy, healthcare. Does this fundamentally change the definition of asset control and security assurance for regulated industries everywhere?
That's a fascinating question. It implies a shift where the hardware itself becomes the guarantor of policy enforcement, not just the software running on top.
Yeah.
A real evolution in how we establish and maintain digital trust.
Something to think about. This was a great deep dive. Thanks so much for breaking down such complex material.
My pleasure. Always interesting to see policy drive technology thus directly.
And thank you for joining us on the deep dive. We'll see you next time.